Lesson 17.
Word list.
Overdue.
Oath.
Peevishly.
Cash.
Bloody.
Drag.
Damn.
Stuff.
Exist.
Sufficient.
Stint.
Avoid.
Absolutely.
Floorboards.
Alternatively.
Farthing.
Interfere.
Part.
Attend.
Properly.
Start.
Embrace.
Apologize.
Doggedly.
Pawn.
Vest.
Settle.
Retire.
Tick.
Cease.
Creep.
Shiver.
Jeweler.
Figure.
Distinctly.
Stare.
Bullseye lantern.
Flash.
Blind.
Tollgate.
Constable.
Display.
Content.
Incline.
Decent.
Entry.
Relief.
Quilt.
Awake.
Idioms and expressions.
To go without.
To pay cash for.
To have one's way.
To drag on.
To be worn out.
To get into debt.
To leave out.
If it wasn't for.
To retire for the night.
To go by.
It won't do to.
To be about.
To be inclined to think, believe, etc.
To make sure.
On one's beat.
To run one in.
To get oneself into trouble.
To make entries in.
To the relief of.
To set the hands of a clock right.
To start a clock, a machine, going.
If it wasn't, weren't, hadn't been, for. Proper names.
Newman.
Elmore.
Text.
The Financiers. Continued. She took three letters from the pockets of her dress and handed them to Easton. Each demanded some payment that was overdue. 12 shillings for the furniture and oilcloth, £1.04 and 1 penny for the general district and special rates, and £1.01 and 5 halfpenny for poor rate. Easton read the letters several times over, and finally, with an oath, threw them on the table. "It's a great pity that we ever had the things at all," he said peevishly. "It would have been much better to have gone without until we could pay cash for them. But you would have your way, of course. Now we'll have this bloody debt dragging on us for years, and before the damn stuff is paid for, it'll be worn out." Ruth did not reply at once. For months she had been existing without sufficient food. When Easton was unemployed, they had to stint themselves so as to avoid getting further into debt than was absolutely necessary. Often she pretended, as she gave him his meals, that she had had her meal while he was out. At last she spoke. "But you were just as much in favour of getting them as I was. You remember how the wind used to come up between the floorboards, and if we hadn't got the oilcloth, there would have been illness in the house." Easton looked alternatively at the list of debts and the three letters, and then he said, "I give you nearly every farthing I earn, and I never interfere with anything, because I think it's your part to attend to the house. but it seems to me you don't manage things properly." This was too much for Ruth. She burst into tears, laying her head on the seat of the chair that was standing near the cradle. Easton started up in surprise. He knelt down by her, embracing her and apologizing.
"I always do the best I can with the money," Ruth sobbed. "I never spend a farthing on myself, but you don't seem to understand how hard it is."
"I'm sorry I spoke to you like that," said Easton. "I didn't mean what I said. It's all my fault. I know you try your best."
"I knew we wouldn't have enough," said Ruth. "Now, if you think I manage so badly, perhaps you can tell me which of those things we ought to leave out."
"We'd be all right if it wasn't for the debts," said Easton doggedly.
"What shall we do about the rates?" asked Ruth.
"I'm sure I don't know. There's nothing left to pawn except my black coat and vest."
"It'll have to be paid somehow, or you'll be taken off to jail, as Mrs. Newman's husband was last winter."
"Well, you'd better take the coat and vest and see what you can get on them tomorrow." So it was settled, and as the fire was nearly out and it was getting late, they prepared to retire for the night. "Well, I hope the clock won't stop in the night," Easton said as he undressed. "It would be a fine thing indeed, not knowing what time it was in the morning."
He woke several times during the night and struck a match to see if it was yet time to get up. At 2:30, the clock was still going, and he again fell asleep. The next time he woke up, the ticking had ceased. He wondered what time it was. It was still very dark, but that was nothing to go by, because it was always dark at 6 now. He was wide awake. He thought it must be nearly time to get up. It would never do to be late. He might get the sack. He got up and dressed himself. Ruth was asleep, so he crept downstairs. He drank a cup of tea, put on his boots, overcoat and hat, and taking his basket, went out of the house. Outside, the rain hadn't stopped, and it was very cold and dark. Easton shivered as he walked. He remembered there was a clock over the front of a jeweller's shop a little way down the main road. When he got there, he found the clock so high up that he could not see the figures on the face distinctly. He stood staring for a few minutes, when suddenly the light of a bull's-eye lantern was flashed into his eyes.
"You are about very early," said a voice,
the owner of which Easton could not see. The light blinded him.
"What time is it?" said Easton. "I've got to get to work at 7, and our clock stopped during the night." "Where are you working?"
"In Elmore Road, you know, near the old toll gate."
"Well," said the constable, "it's very strange that you should be wandering about at this hour, and outside this shop. It's only about 3/4 of an hour's walk from here to Elmore Road. You say you've got to get there at 7, but it's only
3:45 now.
Where do you live? What's your name?"
Easton gave his name and address and began repeating the story about the clock.
"What have you got in that basket?"
"Only my breakfast," Easton said, opening the basket and displaying its contents.
"I'm inclined to believe what you say," said the policeman, after a pause. "But to make quite sure, I'll go home with you. It's on my beat, and I don't want to run you in if you're what you say you are. But I should advise you to buy a decent clock, or you'll be getting yourself into trouble."
When they arrived at the house, Easton opened the door, and after making some entries in his notebook, the officer went away, much to the relief of Easton, who went upstairs, set the hands of the clock right, and started it going. He then removed his overcoat and lay down on the bed in his clothes, covering himself with the quilt. After a while, he fell asleep, and when he awoke, the clock was still ticking. The time was exactly 7 o'clock.